quite a packed house last week, and I know a good number of you were not here, whether sicknesses or elsewhere, and then visitor from Southern Cal and so forth. Anyway, pray for last week's message that went out to people that don't yet know Jesus. It was a clear, simple presentation of the gospel leading up to the resurrected Jesus. Just pray that people get it. I'm not a polished kind of guy. You guys know that. And thank you for being so compassionate toward me regarding that. But truth is truth. And when the Spirit of God leads it out, like with Balaam through the mouth of a donkey, or some guy that just stumbles along through life, it reaches hearts, changes eternity for people. Pray. That's how God reaches people. So pray regarding that. I've been looking forward to these two verses because I learned some new things. We are going to continue on into the book of Ephesians. We are in chapter 6, coming close to finishing it. It would be easy to read these, wrap it up, say, hey, we're done. But there are things wrapped up in verses 19 and 20, which I have not previously known. And so I'm really thankful for other teachers, others that grapple with the Greek language, for instance, that I can't do that. I can look at a word and pronounce it and go to some other work and tell you what it means. Ephesians 6, the armor of God presentation even makes a bit more sense to me. It's easy to disassociate verses 18 through 20 from that armor of God teaching, and that's what is most often done. Sometimes there's a coupling together. Reading verse after 17, verse 18, go right into prayer. Well, that makes some sense regarding the armor of God and praying for each other in the struggles and the walks. So verse 18, with all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit. With this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for all the saints, comma, and pray on my behalf, Paul says, that utterance may be given to me in the opening of my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that in proclaiming it, I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Thank you, Aaron Robinson, for your presentation about your work in Ethiopia. Thank you for alerting us that there is a pastoral guy there and that there is ministry that is happening there as you're assisting. I'm not in Ethiopia. I'm right here. And where Paul was as he wrote this letter, I'm not there. I'm here. But there's some application to draw, no question. These two verses, 19 and 20, most often or typically have been looked at as Paul wanting to do more evangelism, asking them to pray that he might do so in such a way that each person might understand and that he would receive boldness to speak and not hold back. The application then becomes quite obvious that we pray the same thing for one another. God give them boldness as they seek one more person to speak the gospel to. But I've come to understand a different request that Paul is putting out here. I'd never seen it before. And I believe that for us, that specific request is appropriate. God bless this brother or this sister as they're going out and doing that. Give them the right words. Give them somebody that'll hear. Give them boldness. Right on, no problem. But it's different here for Paul and what he's requesting. Let me couch it in this question. Did Paul ever seem to lack boldness? But he's requesting it twice here. Did he ever lack words about the gospel? What is he asking for here? Ah, glad you asked. So come along, enjoy this little journey. This study, I think, is a great example of the importance of keeping context in mind. In this case, the context is where Paul was at the time he wrote this and what was happening. The Apostle Paul was in prison in Rome. It was about AD 62. He wrote three letters at the same time, possibly the same day, from Roman prison. And he sent them by the hand of Tychicus, or however you want to pronounce that word, that name, excuse me. These days, he's not too partial. It's okay. They were addressed to Philemon, and we have that in our Bible as that book. Philemon, who lived in or around the city of Colossae, modern central Turkey, and it concerned Philemon's runaway slave, Onesimus. He had sought Paul out in Rome and then came to know Jesus. God evangelized that time by bringing him directly there, just like God has brought some foreign exchange students right here to us. God had a bigger plan. The second letter was to the church at Colossae by the hand of Tychicus. And it is now our book of Colossians in our Bible. He was addressing a specific problem. You can read about that in chapter 2, which was couched in an amazing doctrinal treatise about Jesus. But he was on a ship in the port city that Tychicus would have deboarded was Ephesus. And so Paul wrote the letter to the Ephesian church to deliver by Tychicus' hand. So three letters in hand, first of all to Ephesus, then on up to Colossae, the church, and individually to the man, Philemon. Okay. So, Paul was in prison in Rome, awaiting his trial for which he had appealed to Caesar. Recall that in the book of Acts? After the final incident in Jerusalem, Acts 25. Who was Caesar in Rome at the time? Nero, beginning to exert his power with insanity. Knowing this, we can begin to imagine why Paul's mind went to the topic of spiritual warfare. And it's not against flesh and blood. Knowing this, we can begin to imagine that and take it a step further. Paul, to the Ephesians, did not request, "Pray that I get released." Not even pray that I get protected from this guy that's now the Caesar. Okay, let's bring it to us here now. When we hear of Pastor so-and-so imprisoned in China, imprisoned in North Korea, or some other oppressed country, it is usually with the admonition to pray for their release, their protection, for their health, for their provision. Sometimes the request is make a call or write a letter to some political dignitary in order for American political pressure to be on that country to release Pastor so-and-so. And I want to be quick to say that's not necessarily wrong, because that is exactly what happened in Acts 12 with Peter. He's in jail and the church is outside doing what? Praying for his release. We have personally seen and known of pastors or missionaries who were, in fact, after praying, they were released, while others were martyred. God has not always answered what we thought was the will of God. But Paul's request was different. It was not for his comfort. It was not for his release. Now, we can easily go to that place. Lord, if he were only released, look at the huge ministry he could accomplish. But the Lord's ways are not our ways. We've got to keep that in mind. And in this text, I think It's crucial to learn from this, to draw in and just see the person of God who is really bigger and knows more and is fully able to accomplish far more than we could ever think of, even imagine. This request by Paul, verses 19 and 20, are based on the fact his knowledge that God was in charge of all things. Here I am in prison. Therefore, the purpose of God. What is it? Now watch this unfold. I have appealed to three specific commentaries working through just these two verses that helped me a lot because they agreed with each other. They know more Greek than I do. Okay, that's always helpful. The actual Greek language in these two verses, 19 and 20, are somewhat judiciary. According to several commentaries, the word for utterance is the word logos. We know that word. But here it's used in a way that is, one commentary said, parliamentary, forensic. It's a court term. It might be similar to our well-known, do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? That utterance may be given to me. It's the idea that I may be given the floor at the assembly, like King Herod did with Paul in Acts 26. You may speak. All the assembly is now paying attention. That's what is intended and how logos is used in this word. And then he says in verse 19, I pray on my behalf that utterance, that the floor may be given to me in the opening of my mouth. And that opening of my mouth is a common expression for making a public address or a long explanation. And we know that Paul was pretty good at the long explanations. But in this case, it's in court. The setting is that Paul is going to have an opportunity, because he appealed to Caesar, at the upcoming trial and wants this church to ask God to give him exact words and right attitude, as well as boldness. He asked for boldness twice here. He anticipates that at the very least, he will be before important Roman dignitaries, possibly Caesar himself. And can you imagine what he's thinking while he's in those chains? Anticipating whenever that's going to happen. I might get to speak in front of Nero. I might get to speak to some of the lessers, but whoever it might be, church, please pray for me that the floor may be given to me in speaking the mystery of the gospel. He is not there to say, those Jews in Jerusalem were unfair to me, so were your dignitaries over there, thus I had to appeal to you. I deserve to be released. He tells them exactly what he's going to be doing, speaking forth the mystery of the gospel, maybe as high as to Caesar. Man, all of a sudden, this gets huge to me. The mystery of the gospel. Back up to Ephesians 3. He uses the word mystery 6 times in this book. The word mystery is not that common in our New Testament. It's commonly by Paul, most common by Paul. But in Ephesians 3:3, he fills in the gap a little bit. He said that by revelation there was made known to me, it wasn't known previous, it was revealed to him, the mystery, as I wrote before in brief, verse 4. And by referring to this, when you read, you can understand my insight into the mystery of Christ, which in other generations was not made known to the sons of men, as it has now been revealed to his holy apostles and prophets in the Spirit. To be specific, I'm at verse 6, that the Gentiles are fellow heirs and fellow members of the body and fellow partakers of the promise in Christ Jesus through the gospel, of which I was made a minister according to the gift of God's grace, which was given to me according to the working of his power. You see, it's all about God. It's not about Paul becoming anything, you know, special. He was just chosen by God. Verse 8, to me, the very least of all his saints, this grace was given to preach to the Gentiles the unfathomable riches of Christ and to bring to light what is the administration of the mystery which for ages has been hidden in God who created all things, in order that the manifold wisdom of God might be now made known through the church to the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places, and so forth. We go on. Those are three times out of six in Ephesians where the word mystery is used. Bring that forth to chapter 6, verse 19, and pray on my behalf that utterance, full floor, freedom to speak the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to speak forth may be given to me in the opening of my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, for which I am an ambassador. That's another political term. Different kind of ambassador. This is really interesting to me. Paul is going to have an opportunity and an upcoming trial and wants this church to ask God to give him the exact words, the exact attitude, and the boldness to speak out. As an ambassador, one of my commentaries, Mr. Linsky, I don't at all mind citing my sources. I'm not smart enough to come up with something like this. His wording is brilliant. As to him being an ambassador there in chains, Mr. Linsky says, but see the vividness in Paul's mind. He sees himself in the most paradoxical light, a prisoner before a judge. And yet this role fades into an ambassador sent by Christ, the King of Kings. Standing in the throne room of Nero, delivering the message of his king to the pagan imperial court. Wonderful double picture indeed. To be given logos is to be given the floor, the right to speak. The ambassadorial figure adds the note of great dignity, that of order, and also the idea of vast import to the message thus to be transmitted. Pray that it may go out with clarity, with power. I would have boldness. He asked for boldness twice. Verse 20, for which I am an ambassador in chains, that in proclaiming it I might speak boldly as I ought to speak. Right? That is, I want to do it right, with the right attitude. He sees himself as an ambassador. And here's the picture where my mind went. In chains. But those chains are attached to Rome, the very place he longed to go. And even better, those chains are attached to the rulers of Rome. Okay. My attitude is always kind of whiny, complaining. I've been treated unfairly. This is not right. God, get me out of this. Show me your goodness. That means if I don't get out of it, he's not good. Oh, really? Paul's attitude was just a little bit different than mine usually is. Do I have something to learn from this? Absolutely. Paul may have remembered, I want you to back up to Acts. I'm going to read just a little portion out of Acts 23. I'm thinking the words of Jesus might have been pretty clear, ringing in his head. Acts 23, beginning at verse 1, just to catch a little context. And Paul, looking intently at the council, the Sanhedrin, in Jerusalem, Acts 23:1, said, "Brethren, I have lived my life." By the way, they wanted to kill him. He was standing before the council, and they wanted to take Christianity out. And here's the kingpin right here. So he addressed them, Acts 23:1, "Brethren, I have lived my life with a perfectly good conscience before God up to this day." And the high priest Ananias commanded those standing by him to strike him on the mouth. Paul said to him, "God is going to strike you whitewashed wall. Huh. And over here, the request is, "Pray that I might speak in the way I ought to speak." Paul was fully capable of reactionary responses that are not necessarily godly. Anyway, let's go on. "And do you sit to try me according to the law? And in violation of the law, order me to be struck?" The bystander said, "Do you revile God's high priest?" All of a sudden, I can imagine the complexion of Paul's face changing just a bit. He said, "I was not aware, brethren, that he was the high priest. For it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people.'" But perceiving that one part were Sadducees, the other part Pharisees, Paul began crying out in the council, "Brethren, I'm a Pharisee, a son of Pharisees. I'm on trial for the hope and the resurrection of the dead." As he said this, there arose dissension, exactly what he knew would happen. He was one of them. He knew precisely arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say there is no resurrection, nor angel, nor spirit. Pharisees acknowledged them all. And there arose a great uproar, and some of the scribes and Pharisaic party stood up and began to argue heatedly, "Oh, we find nothing wrong with this man." Things changed just a little bit here. "We find nothing wrong with this man. Suppose a spirit or an angel has spoken to him." And as a great dissension was developing, the commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces by them. Ordered the troops to go down, take him away from them by force, and bring them into the barracks. But on the night immediately following, the Lord stood at his side and said, "Take courage, for as you have solemnly witnessed to my cause at Jerusalem, so you must witness at Rome also." He stood before the leaders of Jerusalem, and it didn't go so well. Now, before Rome, that has jurisdiction over all of the land, the Roman Empire was huge. He's appealed to Caesar, and there was a Roman law because he was a Roman citizen, that in appealing to Caesar, there was not an option for the rest of the lower dignities but to take him there. Thus, the rest of the book of Acts gets him there. And then we have no more. What happened there in Rome? We don't know. Acts doesn't say. Tradition does. And here in Ephesians is a little hint. Brethren, pray for me. Asking for the right words, with the right attitude, and for boldness, that I might speak out what is the most important thing here. And now, knowing that his chains are attached to Rome and to Caesar himself, please pray. So just to the right of Ephesians 6 is Philippians 1. Philippians also was written from Rome. We really aren't certain if it predates or postdates those other three letters. But there's something pretty interesting in Philippians, chapter 1, verse 12. He's in prison. The church at Philippi is concerned for him. He writes to them, verse 12, "Now I want you to know, brethren, that my circumstances, being in prison in Rome, have turned out for the greater progress of the gospel, so that in my imprisonment in the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard." That's the king's guard. That's the palace guards. This is that elite group of guards in Rome. "In my imprisonment, the cause of Christ has become well known throughout the whole Praetorian Guard and to everyone else." Was this written after he wrote to the church at Ephesus asking them to pray? Did Nero ever hear Paul's vocal cords speak out the gospel? We don't know. But he had a bunch of guards that did hear. And now he's writing to the Philippians to tell them, it's okay, don't worry about me. Things are going so cool here, you can't even believe it. And I love to envision Paul in chains, changing of the guards every whatever hours, we don't know, 6 hours, 12 hours. They only work half a day, 12 hours. There's a guy chained to each side of him. "Oh, what was your name again? Here, let me tell you about Jesus." And the guy can't get away. They've all heard. I mean, I can only just use my imagination. Let it go wild with boldness to speak out the mystery of the gospel. And now he tells the Philippians to the whole Praetorian Guard. "Oh, yeah, you were here, 3 weeks ago, right? Is there anybody else out there, by the way, any other guards that haven't?" No, they've all been here. And maybe they were vying for position to not go. Who knows, But the other result here in Philippians, "And most of the brethren, trusting in the Lord because of my imprisonment, have far more courage to speak the word of God without fear." What are bad circumstances anyway? I think, it might be appropriate to pray that God would change my perspective. Help me to look at things with different eyes. Why did this just happen?
Well, I don't know.
You'll never know why, but you might know what God intended to do with it. And however you want to work that out theologically, I don't even care. God is in the thick of it. He has not abandoned us to the prison in Rome or to wherever that may be. The only other thing I've added this as a concluding thought, God give us a heavenly perspective like this. Let's open it up for a little discussion. Comments, questions, John?
You mentioned verse 20 in, it's New American Standard, "Lord chains, for which I am an ambassador in chains." King James mentions the word bond. "For which I am an ambassador in bond, that therein I may speak boldly." This causes me to think of Paul as he was on his way to Damascus. Christ revealed himself to him and said, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It's hard for you to kick against the prince." And once Christ revealed to him that this persecution of the church is a persecution to me, upon me personally, and he made it very clear that I have a different purpose for you. It is my thought that maybe at that point, Paul realized he has now become obligated to the very one he had been persecuting and is in bonds of obligation to his Savior, because now he has a more perfect understanding, has a more perfect way. And I'm thinking that these bonds that he's to are not necessarily physical chains, but a bond of service to the one who he had been persecuting, but now is serving. Because in Philippians chapter 13, verse 13, 12, 13, "But I wish you should understand, brother,
I would turn to a different passage to talk about those bonds being related to Christ. They aren't unrelated to Christ. I see the point in Philippians. I agree with you. I'm there. And I don't think it's to apply that there at Rome. Absolutely, he is connected, bonded to Christ, bond slave, bond servant of Christ, no question. But he is in actual steel chains as well. So with that, both are important. And I think for me to understand that Paul's perspective of even those steel chains are much different than my perspective, because yes, he is connected to Christ, no question. He writes it over and over again, bond servant of Christ, servant of Christ, over and over again. But to look at this as part of God's will that has a much grander scheme than what these guys at, you know, Nero's office are planning for him. They eventually kill him, no question. Thus, as he says in Philippians, I will be released, whether by life or death. You know, there's some other places where he talks about the same sort of thing. He knows that his life is about to end. He tells Timothy in 2 Timothy, I'm being poured out as a drink offering. It's coming to an end. And it did shortly thereafter, which did him a favor. Go ahead, Brother Steve.
Verse in Philippians that gives us an idea of how God used his imprisonment and essentially planted the seeds to prepare him for this appearing before Caesar. At the very end of the book, he says, all the saints greet you, especially those of Caesar's household.
Yeah. Some of them had ears to hear. Excellent. Somebody else.
In precepts in Ephesians, you talked about Gentiles with the fellow heirs. Is that the mystery he's revealing? Is it that this gospel is both for the Jew and the Gentile?
Yes. That's a huge part of that gospel, that mystery, that the Gentiles are included with believing Jews before the living God and in life of the living God.
Yeah.
When you, at the very beginning, you said God's ways are not our ways. And through seeing God working in my life, working in other people's lives, and it is now in my heart to know God's ways. Our way.
You've lived through it.
This happening. This makes no sense. This is unfair. You know, anger, whatever. But God's ways. We don't understand them. We're on the human level, and we don't see the big picture that God, you know, like, well, how do I reach this person? Pray to God. Pray to God. Pray to Jesus. We are ambassadors of Christ. Stand for him, to our families, whatever, but it's God's way. It's not my way. It's God's way that will bring that person around. I can't do it. I'm not supposed to do it. I can be an ambassador. I can say what God's will is and try and present it to them. It's up to God.
Thank you. Okay, Agatha, let's go ahead and sing a song and we'll kind of bring it all together.